They'd let you rot and use you for fertilizer to help the good ones grow.
I guess I don't want to live like a vegetable then, said Major Danby with a smile of sad resignation.
Danby, must I really let them send me home? Yossarian inquired of him seriously. Major Danby shrugged.
It's a way to save yourself.
It's a way to lose myself, Danby. You ought to know that.
You could have lots of things you want.
I don't want lots of things I want, Yossarian replied, and then beat his fist down against the mattress in an outburst of rage and frustration. God damn it, Danby, I got friends who were killed in this war. I can't make a deal now. Getting stabbed by that bitch was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Would you rather go to jail?
Would you let them send you home? Of course I would, Major Danby declared with conviction. Certainly I would, he added a few moments later in less positive manner. Yes, I suppose I would let them send me home if I were in your place, he decided uncomfortably, after lapsing into troubled contemplation. Then he threw his face sideways disgustedly in a gesture of violent distress and blurted out, Oh, yes, of course I'd let them send me home, but I'm such a terrible coward I couldn't really be in your place. But suppose you weren't a coward, Yossarian demanded, studying him closely. Suppose you did have the courage to defy somebody. Then I wouldn't let them send me home, Major Danby vowed emphatically, with vigorous joy and enthusiasm. But I certainly wouldn't let them court-martial me.
Would you fly more missions?
No, of course not. That would be total capitulation, and I might be killed.
Then you'd run away?
Major Danby started to retort with proud spirit, and came to an abrupt stop, his half-opened jaw swinging closed dumbly. He pursed his lips in a tired pout.
I guess there just wouldn't be any hope for me then, would there?
His forehead and protuberant white eyeballs were soon glistening nervously again. He crossed his limp wrists in his lap and hardly seemed to be breathing as he sat with his gaze drooping toward the floor in acquiescent defeat. Dark, steep shadows slanted in from the window. Yossarian watched him solemnly, and neither of the two men stirred at the rattling noise of a speeding vehicle skidding to a stop outside, and the sound of racing footsteps pounding toward the building in haste.
"Yes, there's hope for you," Yossarian remembered with a sluggish flow of inspiration. "Milo might help you. He's bigger than Colonel Cathcart, and he owes me a few favors."
Major Danby shook his head and answered tonelessly,
Milo and Colonel Cathcart are pals now. He made Colonel Cathcart a vice president and promised him an important job after the war.
Then XPFC Wintergreen will help us, Yossarian exclaimed. He hates them both, and this will infuriate him.
Major Danby shook his head bleakly again.
Milo and XPFC Wintergreen merged last week. They're all partners now in M&M Enterprises. Then there is no hope for us, is there?
No hope.
No hope at all, is there?
No.
No hope at all,
Major Danby conceded. He looked up after a while with a half-formed notion.
Wouldn't it be nice if they could disappear us the way they disappeared the others, and relieve us of all these crushing burdens?
Yossarian said no. Major Danby agreed with a melancholy nod, lowering his eyes again, and there was no hope at all for either of them, until footsteps exploded in the corridor suddenly, and the chaplain, shouting at the top of his voice, came bursting into the room with the electrifying news about Orr, so overcome with hilarious excitement that he was almost incoherent for a minute or two. Tears of great elation were sparkling in his eyes, and Yossarian leaped right out of bed with an incredulous yelp when he finally understood.
"Sweden!" he cried. "Or!" cried the chaplain.
"Or!"
cried Yossarian.
"Sweden!"
cried the chaplain, shaking his head up and down with gleeful rapture, and prancing about uncontrollably from spot to spot in a grinning, delicious frenzy.
"It's a miracle, I tell you! A miracle! I believe in God again! I really do! Washed ashore in Sweden after so many weeks at sea! It's a miracle!"
"Washed ashore, hell!"
Yossarian declared, jumping all about also, and roaring in laughing exultation at the walls, the ceiling, the chaplain, and Major Danby.
He didn't wash ashore in Sweden. He rode there! He rode there! Chaplain, he rode there!
Rode there?
He planned it that way. He went to Sweden deliberately.
Well, I don't care, the chaplain flung back with undiminished zeal. It's still a miracle. A miracle of human intelligence and human endurance. Look how much he accomplished.
The chaplain clutched his head with both hands and doubled over in laughter.
Can't you just picture him? He exclaimed with amazement. Can't you just picture him in that yellow raft, paddling through the Straits of Gibraltar at night with that tiny little blue oar?
With that fishing line trailing out behind him, eating raw codfish all the way to Sweden, and serving himself tea every afternoon.
I can just see him,
cried the chaplain, pausing a moment in his celebration to catch his breath.
It's a miracle of human perseverance, I tell you, and that's just what I'm going to do from now on. I'm going to persevere. Yes, I'm going to persevere.
He knew what he was doing every step of the way,
Yossarian rejoiced, holding both fists aloft triumphantly, as though hoping to squeeze revelations from them. He spun to a stop, facing Major Danby.
Danby, you dope! There is hope after all, can't you see? Even Clevenger might be alive somewhere in that cloud of his, hiding inside until it's safe to come out.
What are you talking about? Major Danby asked in confusion. What are you both talking about?
Bring me apples, Danby, and chestnuts, too. Run, Danby, run! Bring me crab apples and horse chestnuts before it's too late, and get some for yourself!
Horse chestnuts? Crab apples? What in the world for?
To pop into our cheeks, of course!
Yossarian threw his arms up into the air in a gesture of mighty and despairing self-recrimination.
Oh, why didn't I listen to him? Why wouldn't I have some faith?
Have you gone crazy? Major Danby demanded with alarm and bewilderment. Yossarian, will you please tell me what you are talking about?
Danby, or planned it that way. Don't you understand? He planned it that way from the beginning. He even practiced getting shot down. He rehearsed for it on every mission he flew, and I wouldn't go with him. Oh, why wouldn't I listen? He invited me along, and I wouldn't go with him. Danby, bring me buck teeth, too, and a valve to fix, and a look of stupid innocence that nobody would ever suspect of any cleverness. I'll need them all. Oh, why wouldn't I listen to him? Now I understand what he was trying to tell me. I even understand why that girl was hitting him on the head with her shoe.
Why? Inquired the chaplain sharply.
Yossarian whirled and seized the chaplain by the shirt front in an importuning grip.
Chaplain, help me. Please, help me. Get my clothes and hurry, will you? I need them right away.
The chaplain started away alertly.
Yes, Yossarian, I will. But where are they? How will I get them?
By bullying and browbeating anybody who tries to stop you. Chaplain, get me my uniform. It's around this hospital somewhere. For once in your life, succeed at something.
The chaplain straightened his shoulders with determination and tightened his jaw.
Don't worry, Yossarian. I'll get your uniform. But why was that girl hitting Orr over the head with her shoe? Please tell me.
Because he was paying her to. That's why. But she wouldn't hit him hard enough. So he had to row to Sweden. Chaplain, find me my uniform so I can get out of here. Ask Nurse Duckett for it. She'll help you. She'll do anything she can to be rid of me.
Where are you going?
Major Danby asked apprehensively when the chaplain had shot from the room.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to run away,
Yossarian announced in an exuberant, clear voice, already tearing open the buttons of his pajama tops.
Oh, no.
Major Danby groaned and began patting his perspiring face rapidly with the bare palms of both hands.
You can't run away. Where can you run to? Where can you go?
To Sweden.
To Sweden? Major Danby exclaimed in astonishment. You're going to run to Sweden? Are you crazy?
Or did it?
Oh, no, 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 Major Danby pleaded. No, Yossarian, you'll never get there. You can't run away to Sweden. You can't even row.
But I can get to Rome if you'll keep your mouth shut when you leave here and give me a chance to catch a ride. Will you do it?
But they'll find you, Major Danby argued desperately, and bring you back and punish you even more severely.
They'll have to try like hell to catch me this time.
They will try like hell, and even if they don't find you, what kind of way is that to live? You'll always be alone. No one will ever be on your side, and you'll always live in danger of betrayal.
I live that way now.
But you can't just turn your back on all your responsibilities and run away from them, Major Danby insisted. It's such a negative move. It's escapist.
Yossarian laughed with buoyant scorn and shook his head.
I'm not running away from my responsibilities. I'm running to them. There's nothing negative about running away to save my life. You know who the escapists are, don't you, Danby? Not me and Orr.
Chaplain, please talk to him, will you? He's deserting. He wants to run away to Sweden.
Wonderful, cheered the chaplain, proudly throwing on the bed a pillowcase full of Yossarian's clothing.
Run away to Sweden, Yossarian, and I'll stay here and persevere. Yes, I'll persevere. I'll nag and badger Colonel Cathcart and Colonel Korn every time I see them. I'm not afraid. I'll even pick on General Dreidel.
General Dreidel's out,
Yossarian reminded, pulling on his trousers and hastily stuffing the tails of his shirt inside. It's General Peckham now. The chaplain's babbling confidence did not falter for an instant.
Then I'll pick on General Peckham, and even on General Scheisskopf. And you know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to punch Captain Black in the nose the very next time I see him. Yes, I'm going to punch him in the nose. I'll do it when lots of people are around, so that he may not have a chance to hit me back.
Have you both gone crazy?
Major Danby protested, his bulging eyes straining in their sockets with tortured awe and exasperation.
Have you both taken leave of your senses?
Yossarian, listen. It's a miracle, I tell you, the chaplain proclaimed, seizing Major Danby about the waist and dancing him around with his elbows extended for a waltz. A real miracle! If Orr could row to Sweden, then I can triumph over Colonel Cathcart and Colonel Korn, if I only persevere.
Chaplain, will you please shut up? Major Danby entreated politely, pulling free and patting his perspiring brow with a fluttering motion.
He bent toward Yossarian, who was reaching for his shoes.
What about Colonel?
I couldn't care less.
But this may actually...
To hell with them both!
This may actually help them,
Major Danby persisted stubbornly.
Have you thought of that?
Let the bastards thrive, for all I care. Since I can't do a thing to stop them but embarrass them by running away, I've got responsibilities of my own now, Danby. I've got to get to Sweden.
You'll never make it. It's impossible. It's almost a geographical impossibility to get there from here.
Hell, Danby, I know that. But at least I'll be trying. There's a young kid in Rome whose life I'd like to save if I can find her. I'll take her to Sweden with me if I can find her. So it isn't all selfish, is it?
It's absolutely insane. Your conscience will never let you rest.
God bless it, Yossarian laughed. I wouldn't want to live without strong misgivings. Right, Chaplain?
I'm going to punch Captain Black right in the nose the next time I see him, gloried the chaplain, throwing two left jabs in the air and then a clumsy haymaker. Just like that.
What about the disgrace? Demanded Major Danby.
What disgrace? I'm in more disgrace now.
Yossarian tied a hard knot in the second shoelace and sprang to his feet.
Well, Danby, I'm ready. What do you say? Will you keep your mouth shut and let me catch a ride?
Major Danby regarded Yossarian in silence with a strange, sad smile. He had stopped sweating and seemed absolutely calm.
"What would you do if I did try to stop you?" he asked with rueful mockery. "Beat me up?"
Yossarian reacted to the question with hurt surprise.
"No, of course not. Why do you say that?"
"I will beat you up," boasted the chaplain, dancing up close to Major Danby and shadowboxing. "You and Captain Black, and maybe even Corporal Whitcomb. Wouldn't it be wonderful if I found I didn't have to be afraid of Corporal Whitcomb anymore?"
"Are you going to stop me?" Yossarian asked Major Danby, and gazed at him steadily. Major Danby skipped away from the chaplain and hesitated a moment longer.
"No, of course not,"
he blurted out, and suddenly was waving both arms toward the door in a gesture of exuberant urgency.
"Of course I won't stop you. Go, for God's sake, and hurry. Do you need any money?"
I have some money."
"Well, here's some more."
With fervent, excited enthusiasm, Major Danby pressed a thick wad of Italian currency upon Yossarian and clasped his hand in both his own, as much to still his own trembling fingers as to give encouragement to Yossarian.
"It must be nice to be in Sweden now," he observed yearningly. "The girls are so sweet, and the people are so advanced."
"Goodbye, Yossarian,"
the chaplain called,
"and good luck. I'll stay here and persevere, and we'll meet again when the fighting stops."
"So long, chaplain. Thanks, Danby."
"How do you feel, Yossarian?"
"Fine. No, I'm very frightened."
"That's good," said Major Danby. "It proves you're still alive. It won't be fun."
Yossarian started out.
"Yes, it will."
"I mean it, Yossarian. You'll have to keep on your toes every minute of every day. They'll bend heaven and earth to catch you."
"I'll keep on my toes every minute."
"You'll have to jump."
"I'll jump."
"Jump!"
Major Danby cried. Yossarian jumped.
Natalie's whore was hiding just outside the door. The knife came down, missing him by inches. And he took off.
And now, Joseph Heller reads selections from Catch-22 in an archival recording from 1974.
Yossarian, a lead bombardier who had decided to live forever or die in the attempt, and his only mission each time he went up was to come down alive. To die or not to die, that was the question, and Clevenger grew limp trying to answer it. History did not demand Yossarian's premature demise. Justice could be satisfied without it. Progress did not hinge upon it. Victory did not depend upon it. That men would die was a matter of necessity. Which men would die, though, was a matter of circumstance. And Yossarian was willing to be the victim of anything but circumstance. But that was war. Just about all he could find in its favor was that it paid well, and it liberated children from the pernicious influence of their parents. Clevenger knew so much because Clevenger was a genius with a pounding heart and blanching face. He was a gangling, gawky, feverish, famished-eyed brain. As a Harvard undergraduate, he had won prizes and scholarship for just about everything. And the only reason he hadn't won prizes for everything else was he was too busy signing petitions, circulating petitions, and challenging petitions, joining discussion groups, and resigning from discussion groups, attending youth congresses, picketing other youth congresses, and organizing student committees in defense of dismissed faculty members. Everyone agreed that Clevenger was certain to go far in the academic world. In short, Clevenger was one of those people with lots of intelligence and no brains. And everyone knew it except those who soon found it out. In short, he was a dope. He was a very serious, very earnest, and very conscientious dope. He knew everything about literature except how to enjoy it. Yossarian tried to help him. "Don't be a dope," he had counseled Clevenger when they were both at cadet school. But Clevenger would not listen, and found himself up on charges before the action board for conspiring to advocate the overthrow of the cadet officers Lieutenant Shaiskov had appointed. Clevenger had a mind, and Lieutenant Shaiskov had noticed that people with minds tended to get pretty smart at times. Such men were dangerous. The case against Clevenger was open and shut. The only thing missing was something to charge him with. The bloated colonel with the big fat mustache was chairman of the action board and began bellowing at Clevenger the moment Clevenger stepped into the room to plead innocent to the charges Lieutenant Shaiskov had lodged against him. The colonel beat his fist down upon the table and hurt his hand and became so further enraged with Clevenger that he beat his fist down upon the table even harder and hurt his hand some more. Lieutenant Shaiskov glared at Clevenger with tight lips, mortified by the poor impression Clevenger was making. "In 60 days you'll be fighting Billy Patrol," the colonel with the big fat mustache roared, "and you think it's a big fat joke." "I don't think it's a joke, sir," Clevenger replied. "Don't interrupt." "Yes, sir." "And say sir when you do," ordered Major Metcalf. "Yes, sir." "Weren't you just ordered not to interrupt?" Major Metcalf inquired coldly. "But I didn't interrupt, sir," Clevenger protested. "No, and you didn't say sir either." "Add that to the charges against him," Major Metcalf directed the corporal who could take shorthand. "Failure to say sir to superior officers when not interrupting them." "Metcalf," said the colonel, "you're a goddamn fool. Do you know that?" Major Metcalf swallowed with difficulty. "Yes, sir." "Then keep your goddamn mouth shut. You don't make sense." There were 3 members of the action board, the bloated colonel with the big fat mustache, Lieutenant Shaiskov, and Major Metcalf, who was trying to develop a steely gaze. As a member of the action board, Lieutenant Shaiskov was one of the judges who would weigh the merits of the case against Clevenger as presented by the prosecutor. Lieutenant Shaiskov was also the prosecutor. Clevenger had an officer defending him. The officer defending him was Lieutenant Shaiskov. It was all very confusing to Clevenger. One day he had stumbled while marching to class. The next day he was formally charged with breaking ranks while in formation, felonious assault, indiscriminate behavior, mopery, high treason, provoking, being a smart guy, listening to classical music, and so on. In short, they threw the book at him, and there he was, standing in dread before the bloated colonel, who roared once more that in 60 days he would be fighting Billy Patrol, and had demanded to know how the hell he would like being washed out and shipped to the Solomon Islands to bury bodies. Clevenger replied that he would not like it. He was a dope who would rather be a corpse than bury one. "What did you mean," the colonel inquired slowly, "when you said we couldn't punish you?" "When, sir?" "I'm asking the questions. You're answering them." "Yes, sir, I..." "Did you think we brought you here to ask questions and for me to answer them?" "No, sir, I..." "What did we bring you here for?" "To answer questions." "You're goddamn right," roared the colonel. "Now suppose you start answering some before I break your goddamn head. Just what the hell did you mean, you bastard, when you said we couldn't punish you?" "I don't think I ever made that statement, sir." "Will you speak up, please? I couldn't hear you." "Yes, sir, I..." "Will you speak up, please? He couldn't hear you." "Yes, sir, I..." "Metcalf, sir?" "Didn't I tell you to keep your stupid mouth shut?" "Yes, sir." "Then keep your stupid mouth shut when I tell you to keep your stupid mouth shut. Do you understand? Will you speak up, please? I couldn't hear you." "Yes, sir, I..." "Metcalf, is that your foot I'm stepping on?" "No, sir, it must be Lieutenant Shaiskov's foot." "It isn't my foot," said Lieutenant Shaiskov. "Maybe it is my foot after all," said Major Metcalf. "Move it." "Yes, sir." "You'll have to move your foot first, Colonel. It's on top of mine." "Are you telling me to move my foot?" "No, sir." "Oh, no, sir." "Then move your foot and keep your stupid mouth shut. Will you speak up, please? I still couldn't hear you." "Yes, sir." "I said I didn't say you couldn't punish me." "Just what the hell are you talking about?" "I'm answering your question, sir." "What question?" "Just what the hell did you mean, you bastard, when you said we couldn't punish you?" said the corporal, who could take shorthand, reading from his steno pad. All right, said the colonel. Just what the hell did you mean? I didn't say you couldn't punish me, sir. When? When what, sir? Now you're asking me questions again. I'm sorry, sir. I'm afraid I don't understand your question. When didn't you say we couldn't punish you? Don't you understand my question? No, sir, I don't understand. You just told us that. Now suppose you answer my question. But how can I answer it? That's another question you're asking me. I'm sorry, sir, I don't know how to answer it. I never said you couldn't punish me. Now you're telling us when you did say it. I'm asking you to tell us when you didn't say it. Clevenger took a deep breath. I always didn't say you couldn't punish me, sir. That's much better, Mr. Clevenger, even though it is a barefaced lie. Last night in the latrine, didn't you whisper that we couldn't punish you to that other dirty son of a bitch we don't like? What's his name? Yossarian, sir, said Lieutenant Shaiskov. Yeah, Yossarian. That's right, Yossarian. Yossarian? Is that his name? Yossarian? What the hell kind of a name is Yossarian? Lieutenant Shaiskov had the facts at his fingertips. It's Yossarian's name, sir, he explained. Yes, I suppose it is. Didn't you whisper to Yossarian we couldn't punish you? Oh, no, sir. I whispered to him that you couldn't find me guilty. I may be stupid, interrupted the colonel, but the distinction escapes me. I guess I am pretty stupid because the distinction escapes me. What, you're a windy son of a bitch, aren't you? Nobody asked you for clarification, and you're giving me clarification. I was making a statement, not asking for clarification. You are a windy son of a bitch, aren't you? No, sir. No, sir? Are you calling me a goddamn liar? Oh, no, sir. Then you're a windy son of a bitch, aren't you? No, sir. Are you trying to pick a fight with me? No, sir. Are you a windy son of a bitch? No, sir. God damn it, you are trying to pick a fight with me. For 2 stinking cents, I jump over this big fat table and rip your stinking cowardly body apart limb from limb. Do it, cried Major Metcalf. Metcalf, you stinking son of a bitch, didn't I tell you to keep your stinking cowardly stupid mouth shut? Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir. Then suppose you do it. I was only trying to learn, sir. The only way a person can learn is by trying. Who says so? Everybody says so, sir. Even Lieutenant Shaiskov says so. Do you say so? Yes, sir, said Lieutenant Shaiskov, but everybody says so. Well, Metcalf, suppose you try keeping that stupid mouth of yours shut, and maybe that's the way you learn how. Now, where were we? Read me back the last line. Read me back the last line, read back the corporal who could take short air. Not my last line, stupid, the colonel shouted. Somebody else's. Read me back the last line, read back the corporal. That's my last line again, shrieked the colonel, turning purple with anger. Oh, no, sir, corrected the corporal. That's my last line. I read it to you just a moment ago. Don't you remember, sir? It was only a moment ago. Oh, my God. Read me back his last line, stupid. Say, what the hell's your name, anyway? Popinjay, sir. Well, you're next, Popinjay. As soon as his trial ends, your trial begins. Get it? Yes, sir. What will I be charged with? What the hell difference does that make? Did you hear what he asked me? You're going to learn, Popinjay. The minute we finish with Clevenger, you're going to learn. Cadet Clevenger, what did... You are Cadet Clevenger, aren't you? And not Popinjay? Yes, sir. Good. What did... I'm Popinjay, sir. Popinjay, is your father a millionaire or a member of the Senate? No, sir. Then you're up Shit Creek, Popinjay, without a paddle. He's not a general or a high-ranking member of the administration, is he? No, sir. That's good. What does your father do? He's dead, sir. Oh, that's very good. You really are up the creek, Popinjay. Is Popinjay really your name? Just what the hell kind of a name is Popinjay anyway? I don't like it. It's Popinjay's name, sir, Lieutenant Shaiskov explained. Well, I don't like it, Popinjay, and I just can't wait to rip your stinking cowardly body apart limb from limb. Cadet Clevenger, will you please repeat what the hell it was you did or didn't whisper to Yossarian late last night in the latrine? Yes, sir. I said you couldn't find me guilty. We'll take it from there. Precisely what did you mean, Cadet Clevenger, when you said we could not find you guilty? I didn't say you couldn't find me guilty, sir. When? When what, sir? God damn it, are you going to start pumping me again? No, sir. I'm sorry, sir. Then answer the question. When didn't you say we couldn't find you guilty? Late last night in the latrine, sir. Is that the only time you didn't say it? No, sir. I always didn't say you couldn't find me guilty, sir. What I did say to Osarian was nobody asked you what you did say to Osarian. We asked you what you didn't say to him. We're not at all interested in what you did say to Osarian. Is that clear? Yes, sir. Then we'll go on. What did you say to Osarian? I said to him, sir, that you couldn't find me guilty of the offense with which I am charged and still be faithful to the cause of what? You're mumbling. Stop mumbling. Yes, sir. And mumble, sir, when you do. Metcalf, you bastard. Yes, sir, mumbled Clevenger. Justice, sir, that you couldn't find. Justice? The colonel was astounded. What is justice? Justice, sir, that's not what justice is, the colonel jeered and began pounding the table again with his big fat hand. That's what Karl Marx is. I'll tell you what justice is. Justice is a knee in the gut from the floor on the chin at night sneaky, with a knife brought up down on the magazine of a battleship sandbagged, underhanded in the dark without a word of warning. Garroting. That's what justice is when we've all got to be tough enough and rough enough to fight Billy Patrol. From the hip. Get it? No, sir. Don't, sir, me. Yes, sir. And say, sir, when you don't, ordered Major Metcalf. Clevenger was guilty, of course, or he would not have been accused. And since the only way to prove it was to find him guilty, it was their patriotic duty to do so. It was all very confusing to Clevenger. They would have lynched him if they could. They were three grown men, and he was a boy, and they hated him and wished him dead. Yossarian had done his best to warn him the night before. You haven't got a chance, kid, he had told him glumly. They hate Jews. I'm not Jewish, answered Clevenger. That will make no difference, Yossarian promised. They're after everybody. Clevenger recoiled from their hatred as though from a blinding light. These three men spoke his language and wore his uniform. But Clevenger understood now that nowhere in the world were there men who hated him more. Yossarian asked ex-PFC Wintergreen, the influential mail clerk at headquarters, couldn't you forge some official orders on that mimeograph machine of yours and get us out of flying to Bologna? Ex-PFC Wintergreen pulled away slowly with a look of scorn. Sure, I could, he explained with pride, but I would never dream of doing anything like that. Why not? Because it's your job. We all have our jobs to do. My job is to unload these Zippo lighters at a profit if I can and pick up some cotton from Milo. Your job is to bomb the ammunition dumps at Bologna. But I'm going to be killed at Bologna, Yossarian pleaded. We're all going to be killed. Then you'll just have to be killed, replied ex-PFC Wintergreen. Why can't you be a fatalist about it the way I am? If I'm destined to unload these lighters at a profit and pick up some Egyptian cotton cheap for Milo, then that's what I'm going to do. And if you're destined to be killed over Bologna, then you're going to be killed, so you might just as well go out and die like a man. I hate to say this, Yossarian, but you're turning into a chronic complainer. Clevenger agreed with ex-PFC Wintergreen that it was Yossarian's job to get killed over Bologna. You know very well that I don't approve of Colonel Cathcart any more than you do. Clevenger paused for emphasis, his mouth quivering, then beat his fist down softly against the sleeping bag. But it's not for us to determine what targets must be destroyed, or who's to destroy them, or who's to get killed doing it, interrupted Yossarian. And why? Yes, even that. We have no right to question. You're insane. No right to question. Do you really mean that it's not my business how or why I get killed and that it is Colonel Cathcart's? Do you really mean that? Yes, I do, Clevenger insisted, seeming unsure. There are men entrusted with winning the war who are in a much better position than we are to decide what targets have to be bombed. We're talking about two different things, Yossarian answered with exaggerated weariness. You are talking about the relationship of the Air Corps to the infantry, and I am talking about the relationship of me to Colonel Cathcart. You are talking about winning the war, and I am talking about winning the war and keeping alive. Exactly, Clevenger snapped smugly. And which do you think is more important? To whom? Yossarian shot back. Open your eyes, Clevenger. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference who wins the war to someone who's dead. Clevenger sat for a moment as though he'd been slapped. Congratulations, he exclaimed bitterly. I can't think of another attitude that could be depended upon to give greater comfort to the enemy. The enemy, retorted Yossarian, is anybody who's going to get you killed, no matter which side he's on. And that includes Colonel Cathcart. And don't you forget that, because the longer you remember it, the longer you might live. And Yossarian knew he was right, because, to the best of his knowledge, he had never been wrong. Everywhere he looked was a nut, and he knew his life was in peril. Major had had a difficult time from the start. Like Minervichevi, he had been born too late. Major had been born too late and too mediocre. Some men are born mediocre. Some men achieve mediocrity. And some men have mediocrity thrust upon them. With Major, it had been all three. Even among men lacking all distinction, he inevitably stood out as a man lacking more distinction than all the rest. And people who met him were always impressed by how unimpressive he was. Major was polite to his elders, who disliked him. Whatever his elders told him to do, he did. They told him to look before he leaped. And he always looked before he leaped. They told him never to put off until the next day what he could do the day before, and he never did. He was told to honor his father and his mother, and he honored his father and his mother. He was told that he should not kill, and he did not kill, until he got into the army. Then he was told to kill, and he killed. He turned the other cheek on every occasion, and always did unto others exactly as he would have had others do unto him. When he gave to charity, his left hand never knew what his right hand was doing. He never once took the name of the Lord his God in vain, committed adultery, or coveted his neighbor's ass. In fact, he loved his neighbor and never even bore false witness against him. Major's elders disliked him because he was such a flagrant nonconformist. Because Major needed a friend so desperately, he never found one. Major's father, on the other hand, was a sober, God-fearing man whose idea of a good joke was to lie. He was a long-limbed farmer, a freedom-loving, law-abiding, rugged individualist who held that federal aid to anyone but farmers was creeping socialism. He had a Calvinist's faith in predestination and could perceive how everyone's misfortunes but his own were expressions of God's will. His specialty was alfalfa, and he made a good thing out of not growing any. The government paid him well for every bushel of alfalfa he did not grow. The more alfalfa he did not grow, the more money the government gave him. And he spent every penny he did not earn on new land to increase the amount of alfalfa he did not produce. Major's father worked without rest at not growing alfalfa. On long winter evenings, he remained indoors and did not mend harness. And he sprang out of bed at the crack of noon every day, just to make certain the chores would not be done. He invested in land wisely, and soon was not growing more alfalfa than any other man in the county. Neighbors sought him out for advice on all subjects, for he had made much money, and was therefore deemed wise. As ye sow, so shall ye reap, he counseled. And everyone said, Amen. Major found Yossarian blocking his path. Captain Yossarian requests permission to speak to the Major at once about a matter of life or death. Permission denied, Major snapped. That won't do it, Major. Major gave in. All right, he conceded. Jump inside my office. After you, sir. They jumped inside the office. Major sat down, and Yossarian moved around in front of the desk and told him he didn't want to fly any more combat missions. What could he do, Major asked himself. All he could do was what he had been instructed to do and hope for the best. Why not, he asked. I'm afraid. That's nothing to be ashamed of, Major counseled him. We're all afraid. I'm not ashamed, Yossarian explained. I'm just afraid. You wouldn't be normal if you were never afraid. Even the bravest men experience fear. One of the biggest jobs we all face in combat is to overcome our fear. Oh, come on, Major. Can't we do without that horseshit? Major lowered his gaze sheepishly and fiddled with his fingers. What do you want me to tell you? That I've flown enough missions and can go home. How many have you flown? 51. You've only got 4 more to fly. He'll raise them. Every time I get close, Colonel Cathcart raises them. Colonel Cathcart is our commanding officer, and we must obey him. Why don't you fly the 4 more missions and see what happens? I don't want to. What could you do? Major asked himself again. What could you do with a man who looked you squarely in the eye and said he would rather die than be killed in combat? A man who was at least as mature and intelligent as you were, and who you had to pretend was not. What could you say to him? Suppose everybody on our side felt that way. Then I'd certainly be a damned fool to feel any other way, wouldn't I? What could you possibly say to him, Major wondered. One thing he could not say was that there was nothing he could do. To say there was nothing he could do would suggest he would do something if he could, and imply the existence of an error or injustice. He must never say there was nothing he could do. I'm sorry, he said, but there's nothing I can do. Dr. Nika, the squadron flight surgeon, shook his melancholy head and refused to ground Yossarian. You think you've got troubles? Dr. Nika rebuked him grievingly. What about me? I lived on peanuts for 8 years while I learned how to be a doctor. Then, just as a shop was finally starting to show a big profit, they drafted me. I don't know what you're complaining about. Dr. Nika was Yossarian's friend and would do just about nothing in his power to help him. Oh, I'm not complaining, he complained. I know there's a war going on. I know a lot of people are going to have to suffer for us to win it. But why must I be one of them? Why don't they draft some of these old doctors who keep shooting their kisses off in public about what big sacrifices the medical game stands ready to make? I don't want to make sacrifices. I want to make dough. Actually, he was a very warm, compassionate man who never stopped feeling sorry for himself. You're wasting your time, Dr. Nika was forced to tell him. Can't you ground someone who's crazy, asked Yossarian. Oh, sure, I have to. There's a rule saying I have to ground anyone who's crazy. Then why don't you ground me? I'm crazy. Ask Clevenger. Clevenger? Where's Clevenger? You find Clevenger. I'll ask him. Then ask any of the others. They'll tell you how crazy I am. They're crazy. Then why don't you ground them? Why don't they ask me to? Because they're crazy, that's why. Of course they're crazy, Dr. Nika replied. I just told you they're crazy, didn't I? And you can't let crazy people decide whether you're crazy or not, can you? Yossarian tried another approach. Is Orr crazy? He sure is. Can you ground him? I sure can. But first he has to ask me to. That's part of the rule. And why doesn't he ask you to? Because he's crazy. He has to be crazy to keep flying combat missions after all the close calls he's had. Sure, I can ground Orr, but first he has to ask me. That's all he has to do to be grounded? That's all. Let him ask me. And then you can ground him? Oh, no. Then I can't ground him. You mean there's a catch? Sure there's a catch, Dr. Nika replied. Catch 22. Anyone who wants to get out of combat duty isn't really crazy. There was only one catch, and that was Catch 22, which specified that a concern for one's own safety in the face of dangers that were real and immediate was the process of a rational mind. Orr was crazy and could be grounded. All he had to do was ask. And as soon as he did, he would no longer be crazy and would have to fly more missions. Orr would be crazy to fly more missions, and sane if he didn't. But if he was sane, he had to fly them. If he flew them, he was crazy and didn't have to. If he didn't want to, he was sane and had to. Yossarian was moved very deeply by the absolute simplicity of this clause of Catch 22 and let out a respectful whistle. "That's some catch, that Catch 22," he observed. "It's the best there is," Dr. Neeker agreed. Yossarian crawled into the rear section of the plane over the bomb bay after Dobbs had beseeched him on the intercom to help the gunner. "Please help the gunner." Yossarian's stomach turned over when his eyes first beheld the macabre scene. He was revolted, and he paused in fright a few moments before descending. Crouched on his hands and knees in the narrow tunnel over the bomb bay, beside the sealed corrugated carton containing the first aid kit. Snowden was lying on his back on the floor with his legs stretched out, still burdened cumbersomely by his flak suit, his flak helmet, his parachute harness, and his Mae West. Not far away on the floor lay the small tail gunner in a dead faint. The wound Yossarian saw was in the outside of Snowden's thigh, as large and deep as a football, it seemed. It was impossible to tell where the shreds of his coveralls ended and the ragged flesh began. There was no morphine in the first aid kit, no protection for Snowden against pain but the numbing shock of the gaping wound itself. The 12 syrettes of morphine had been stolen from their case. Quickly he began drawing a tourniquet around Snowden's thigh, because he could not think what else to do in those first tumultuous moments when he knew he must act competently and feared he might go to pieces. Snowden watched him steadily, saying nothing. No artery was spurting, but Yossarian kept on, because applying a tourniquet was something he did know how to do. He worked with simulated skill and composure, feeling Snowden's lackluster gaze resting upon him. He recovered possession of himself before the tourniquet was finished, and loosened it immediately to lessen the danger of gangrene. His mind was clear now, and he knew how to proceed. He rummaged through the first aid kit for scissors. "I'm cold," Snowden said softly. "I'm cold." "You're gonna be all right, kid," Yossarian reassured him with a big grin. "You're gonna be all right." "I'm cold," Snowden said again in a frail, childlike voice. "I'm cold." "There, there," Yossarian said, because he didn't know what else to say. "There, there." Yossarian was frightened and moved more swiftly. He began cutting carefully through Snowden's coveralls high up above the wound, just below the groin. The tiny tail gunner woke up while Yossarian was cutting with the scissors, saw him, and fainted again. Snowden rolled his head to the other side of his neck in order to stare at Yossarian more directly. A dim, sunken light glowed in his weak and listless eyes. Yossarian, puzzled, tried not to look at him. He cut downward through the coveralls along the inside seam until he reached the bottom and peeled open the severed leg of the garment. It fell to the floor with a plop. Yossarian was stunned at how waxen and ghastly Snowden's bare leg looked, how loathsome. The wound he saw now was not nearly as large as a football, but as long and wide as his hand. The raw muscles inside twitched like live hamburger meat. A long sigh of relief escaped slowly from Yossarian's mouth when he saw that Snowden was not in danger of dying. The blood was already coagulating inside the wound, and it was simply a matter of bandaging him up and keeping him calm until the plane landed. He removed some packets of sulfanilamide from the first aid kit. Snowden quivered when Yossarian turned him up slightly on his side. "Did I hurt you?" "I'm cold," Snowden whimpered. "I'm cold." "There, there," Yossarian said. "There, there. It's starting to hurt me," Snowden cried out suddenly. Yossarian scrambled frantically through the first aid kit in search of morphine again, and found only Milo's note,
and a bottle of aspirin. He cursed Milo and held two aspirin tablets out to Snowden. He had no water to offer. Snowden rejected the aspirin with an almost imperceptible shake of his head. His face was pale and pasty. "I'm cold," Snowden moaned with half-closed eyes. "I'm cold." The edges of his mouth were turning blue. Yossarian was petrified. He wondered whether to pull the ripcord of Snowden's parachute and cover him with the nylon folds. Glancing up unexpectedly, Snowden gave him a wan, cooperative smile and shifted the position of his hips a bit so that Yossarian could begin salting the wound with sulfanilamide. Yossarian poured envelope after envelope of the white crystalline powder into the bloody oval wound until nothing red could be seen. Quickly, he covered the whole wound with a large cotton compress and jerked his hand away. Next, he began binding the compress in place with a roll of gauze. Then he made the whole thing fast with a tidy square knot. It was a good bandage, he knew, and he sat back on his heels with pride, wiping the perspiration from his brow. And he grinned at Snowden. "I'm cold," Snowden moaned. "I'm cold." "You're going to be all right, kid," Yossarian assured him, patting his arm comfortingly. "Everything's under control." Snowden shook his head feebly. "I'm cold," he repeated, with eyes as dull and blind as stone. "I'm cold." "There, there," said Yossarian with growing doubt. "We'll be back on the ground soon, and everything will be okay." But Snowden kept shaking his head and pointed at last, with just the barest movement of his chin, down toward his armpit. Yossarian bent forward and saw a strangely colored stain seeping through the coveralls just above the armhole of Snowden's flak suit. Yossarian felt his heart stop, then pound so violently he found it difficult to breathe. Snowden was wounded inside his flak suit. Yossarian ripped open the snaps of Snowden's flak suit and heard himself scream wildly as Snowden's inside slithered down to the floor in a soggy pile and just kept dripping out. A chunk of flak more than 3 inches big had shot into his other side just underneath the arm and blasted all the way through, drawing whole mottled quarts of Snowden along with it through the gigantic hole in his ribs it made as it blasted out. Yossarian screamed a second time and squeezed both his hands over his eyes. His teeth were chattering in horror. He forced himself to look again. Here was God's plenty, all right, he thought bitterly as he stared. Liver, lungs, kidneys, ribs, stomach, and bits of the stewed tomato Snowden had eaten that day for lunch. Yossarian hated stewed tomatoes and turned away dizzily and began to vomit, clutching his burning throat. The tail gunner woke up while Yossarian was vomiting, saw him, and fainted again. Yossarian was limp with exhaustion, pain, and despair when he finished. He turned back weakly to Snowden, whose breath had grown softer and more rapid, and whose face had grown paler. All this time he had been treating Snowden for the wrong wound. He wondered how in the world to begin to save him now. "I'm cold," Snowden whimpered. "I'm cold." "There, there," Yossarian mumbled mechanically in a voice too low to be heard. "There, there." Yossarian was cold, too, and shivering uncontrollably. He felt goose pimples clacking all over him as he gazed down despondently at the grim secret Snowden had spilled all over the messy floor. It was easy to read the message in his entrails. Man was matter. That was Snowden's secret. Drop him out a window and he'll fall. Set fire to him and he'll burn. Bury him and he'll rot, like other kinds of garbage. The spirit gone, man is garbage. That was Snowden's secret. Ripeness was all. "I'm cold," Snowden said. "I'm cold." "There, there," said Yossarian. "There, there." He pulled the ripcord of Snowden's parachute and covered his body with the white nylon sheets. "I'm cold." "There, there." "I'm going to run away," Yossarian announced in an exuberant, clear voice, already tearing open the buttons of his pajama tops. "Oh, no," Major Danby groaned, and began patting his perspiring face rapidly with the bare palms of both hands. "You can't run away. Where can you run to? Where can you go?" "To Sweden," Yossarian said. "To Sweden? You'll never get there. But I can get to Rome if you'll keep your mouth shut when I leave here. Will you do it? They'll find you, Major Danby argued desperately, and bring you back here and punish you. They'll have to try like hell to catch me. They will try like hell. And even if they don't find you, what kind of way is that to live? You'll always be alone. You'll always live in danger. I live that way now, Yossarian said. But you can't just turn your back on all your responsibilities and run away from them, Major Danby insisted. It's such a negative move. It's escapist. Yossarian laughed and shook his head. I'm not running away from my responsibilities. I'm running to them. There's nothing negative about running away to save my life. You know who the escapists are, don't you, Danby? Oh, no, not me. Chaplain, please talk to him, will you? He's deserting. He wants to run away to Sweden. Wonderful, cheered the chaplain, throwing on the bed a pillowcase full of Yossarian's clothing. Run away to Sweden, Yossarian, and I'll stay here and persevere. Yes, I'll persevere. I'll stay. Chaplain, will you please shut up, Major Danby entreated politely. Yossarian, listen, you'll never make it. It's impossible. It's almost a geographical impossibility to get to Sweden from here. Oh, hell, Danby, I know that. But at least I'll be trying. It's insane. Your conscience will never let you rest. God bless it, laughed Yossarian. I wouldn't want to live in this world without strong misgivings. What about the disgrace, Major Danby asked. I'm in more disgrace now, just being here. Yossarian tied a hard knot in the second shoelace and sprang to his feet. Well, Danby, I'm ready. Are you going to try to stop me? Major Danby hesitated one moment longer. Oh, no, of course not, he blurted out. And suddenly he was waving both arms toward the door. Of course I won't stop you. Go, for God's sakes, and hurry. Do you need any money? I've got money. Here's some more. With fervent, excited enthusiasm, Major Danby pressed a wad of Italian currency upon Yossarian and clasped his hand in both his own, as much to still his own trembling fingers as to give encouragement to Yossarian. Goodbye, Yossarian. How do you feel? Fine. No, I'm frightened. That's good, said Major Danby. It proves you're still alive. It won't be fun. Yossarian started to the door. Yes, it will, he said. I mean it, Yossarian. You'll have to keep on your toes every minute of every day. They'll bend heaven and earth to catch you. I'll keep on my toes every minute, Yossarian said. You'll have to jump, Major Danby warned. I'll jump, Yossarian vowed. Jump! Major Danby cried. Yossarian jumped. Nately's whore was hiding with her knife just outside the door. The knife came down, missing him by inches, and he took off.
Catch-22 was written by Joseph Heller and read by J.O. Sanders, featuring an archival recording of the author. The music mix was by Terry Hogan. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Catch-22 is available in print from Simon & Schuster.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.